And good morning to you, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome live here out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point, with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVY, The Voice, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future and the issues of the day. But we are bullishly local on this community, on Greater Tucson, on this metro, on this region. Thanks for being with us here. This drive time hour, 9 to 10 every morning, Monday through Friday. Looking forward, as always, to the conversation ahead. You're welcome to join. 790-2040 is the live line number. Here in just a second, Pastor Jeff Loxton, our faith and culture contributor, we're going to talk about a couple of the big issues of the day. And oddly enough, an unscripted, we're going to talk about some of the things that came up in yesterday's show, talking about Facebook and talking about Arizona's senior Senator Sinema and the issues surrounding that. For someone who works as hard as she does to stay out of the media, she's getting her share of national media. And of course, we'll keep talking about some of the issues surrounding that. Pastor Jeff Loxton is with us, Hope City Church. When we're done, Ruben Navarrete, the most widely read Latino columnist in the country. You've seen him on USA Today, Fox News, and everything in between. We'll talk about Facebook as well, a topic that I think deserves the two or three conversations that we are having this week on the program about it. And I think the future of this American moment, a topic you know that I talk a lot about on this show. So let's jump into it, and I'll tease you because I've got a third segment topic. And it relates to some of the local challenges we've had around safety this week. So we'll talk about that as well. Full show. Without further ado, Pastor Jeff Loxton, good to see you.
Good to see you. Good morning, Zach.
Man of the cloth in shorts and a polo today.
Today.
Versus a t-shirt.
it's warming. It's cooling down.
Yeah, exactly.
At the polo.
Time to wear a heavier mm-hmm. short sleeve shirt. Always good to see you. And I don't know, maybe I'll just kick it off. I know you have lots of thoughts. A Washington Post article from September 16th was dug up in the process of preparing for this show. Obviously, the Wall Street Journal for the last 3 or 4 weeks has been doing some investigative journalism on Facebook. But here's how an article out of the Washington Post starts a piece from September 16th. Facebook knew that teen girls on Instagram reported in large numbers that the app was hurting their body image and mental health. It knew that its content moderation systems suffered from an indefensible double standard in which celebrities were treated far differently than the average user. It knew that a 2018 change to its newsfeed software intended to promote meaningful interactions ended up promoting outrageous and divisive political content. Facebook knew all of those things because they were findings from its own internal research teams, but it didn't tell anyone. In some cases, its executives even made public statements at odds with the findings. I think these are all issues that intersect your work as a pastor of a local faith community, Hope City Church on 22nd Street, and your role as a pastor broadly of and in our community, Pastor Jeff. Obviously, the last 7 days, for sure, have been a fire hydrant of information and whistleblowing of Facebook, a dominant influence in our lives today. We talk faith and culture on right. this program. Your words and thoughts in this moment.
Yeah, I think we're entering a new era. We've been in a new era where people are living in that virtual world. We're talking about Facebook, but it spans beyond that into Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter. Pick your platform. And I think that is a culture, you know, as you mentioned, Sinema and things surrounding that, it influences our society in every way. I think you and I, as we were talking about this discussion offline, was, well, how does that intersect with one's faith? And it affects the temperature, it affects the climate of how we interact with each other, the way that plays out at home, the way it plays out in the workplace. And now we're seeing discussions front and center with the whistleblowers related to Facebook. I think maybe it gets eye rolls from those listening, but they're connected. And what is that ultimately doing to the way that we interact with each other?
What would you say, you know, how did we get to this moment as a society from the influence of social media, and how do we live in the present, and then how do we get out of the worst of it? You know, there's that famous book, How Then Should We Live? How Then Should We Live?
Right, right.
So I'm asking you, Pastor Jeff, how then should we live? Whether we are people of faith or people trying to live well in our communities,
yeah.
How do we live in this moment?
Well, I think personally, and this is my own story, I'm curious to know what those stories are of those that are listening. With the dawn of platforms like Facebook, there's a curiosity. It's new. It's exciting. Helps me stay connected. I can tell you, Zach, as I'm talking to you right now, I appreciate Facebook for reminding me when my friends' birthdays are. And at this point, that may be one of the only things that I appreciate, because I'm bombarded by ads there in that platform that I just don't have time for. But others get sucked into the storylines, the reality is, and we know this, that in this time there are algorithms that have become a part of deciding the bubbles that we live in. And so if someone doesn't like what they're seeing, there's a great chance that we created it, that I created the very bubbles that I'm frustrated with. How do we get out of it? I think here's an interesting story I read in a book called White Space by Juliet Funt. And she completely shut off Facebook because she was so disenchanted with it, only to realize that she missed the death of a very close friend. And the first she heard about it was one of her friends calling and saying, I'm so sorry about so-and-so. And she said, what are you talking about? Only to realize that Facebook was the only environment that person had been posting updates about their death or their impending death for the last 6 months. And so she came to this conclusion that she can't completely cut off the very things that she's disenchanted with. She has to figure out how to coexist with them in a way that enables her to have healthy boundaries so she doesn't miss out on the lives of the loved ones that she cares about. That was very eye-opening to me, because I think it's not an all or nothing in those cases. Somehow we have to figure out what those boundaries are and look in the mirror and say, what am I doing to create the worlds that I'm living in? Do I like the world I'm living in? How can I change it?
You know, it's funny, Pastor Jeff, that you ended on those last sentences, because I think this is what Ruben Navarrete and I are going to talk about at the end of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, what is this balance of saying, look, Facebook as a social ecosystem, as an institution, is broken and has fought repair. What does that mean now?
Mm-hmm.
Versus what is the role of the individual to balance, set boundaries, and reconnect to the real world? I mean, I think that's an argument in here. Again, our chats with you, Pastor, are to try and build some more reference points around our community life. Step back 30,000 feet. I posted something, we'll close on this, I posted something on my Facebook the other day of, you know, I'm a digital native in the sense of my adolescence was really shaped by this shift from MySpace to Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And then we know Facebook has had that staying power over time. And I thought to myself, you know, that has been a tool that has, I think, built bridges, built friendships, built some level of brand, some level of influence. There's a piece of me that wants to completely unplug, not even set boundaries, but completely unplug from social media. And there's a huge piece of me that wants to experiment with what generations before me did to create community and build influence
yeah.
without social media. I just have zero, I don't have zero, I have little understanding of what that would look like. And I wonder if in the past, you know, our institutions were the place where we were formed and formed relationship. It was in our neighborhood associations. It was at, you know, our American Legion meetings. It was at our churches. It was at our community groups where we were known and knew. And social media, I think, has taken that over. And now we find out that they're making money and their business model is designed to pit you and I against each other and create meaningful interactions, aka manufactured dissent and manufactured outrage. What is the role of institutions like the church to kind of regain some sanity and create those boundaries around social media and pull back a little bit from this thing?
Our institutions, and this is an interesting challenge even for the local church, people in a faith community, our institutions are, should be, probably are, more than likely representations of multi-generational audiences. And I think what I'm getting at with that is future generations, my parents and their parents, know what it's like to pick up the phone and have a conversation, know what it's like to get that snail mail in your mailbox at home, know what it's like to sit down and have a cup of coffee or a meal together with somebody. And I think the next generation, that looks very differently for them. Thank you comes via text, if it comes at all, you know. And so how do we build those bridges with the previous generations and tap into some of those things that might be passé, but we as a society revive as centerpieces for how we engage each other and how we relate in ways that I think are healthier than what we've known. I think it's a challenge, but it's worth fighting for.
I know we're a little bit over time, but I think this is so important, and I'm processing a little bit on the fly. I can imagine some of this sounds a little fluffy. You know, bridges, connection, know and be known. But I think the reality, again, is that social media, we've been told, is that connection point. The flip side, then, is that as it has created division, outrage, and mistruth, mm-hmm. now those tech companies have the ability to then start to regulate what they think is the truth and what is right. And so there's a double-decker bus mm-hmm. of challenge here that I think is going to require us pulling back and pulling away and figuring out how to live in community again. And maybe it's a physical thank you note, and maybe it's a phone call, and maybe it's showing up with a plate of cookies, for crying out loud, which feels so Leave It to Beaver, but maybe they were onto something.
I'll give you my address if you're delivering cookies.
Right.
I think, you know, social
people
media
won't drive out that far past your jacket.
Right, no,
you can
they
forget
won't
about
drive
it.
That far.
No one's going to drive out to the hinterlands to bring you cookies.
We can't get Grubhub to do that.
That's right.
I think it's a starting point for connection. It's not the ending point.
Yeah. It's a tool.
It's a tool.
Yeah. And I don't think I'm going to completely unplug, but I'm going to think about how to change how I use it and change how much I use it. And everything in moderation, right?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Pastor Jeff I can see in his eyes he's thinking about cookies. Okay, Matt's going to kick us off if we don't kick ourselves off. Let's go to our first break of the hour. When we come back, we'll talk about a little bit of a different topic. It's our faith and culture conversation with Pastor Jeff Loxton, Hope City Church here on the 22nd Street Corridor, trying to bring back every now and again here on the program a 50,000-foot view on the issues we face, some reference points to try to make sense of a world that just keeps getting more senseless. It's a weird time. Pastor Jeff is here to guide us through it. We'll be right back here on Tipping Point. Don't go anywhere.
We're the place where Tucson comes to talk. 1030, The Voice.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
Helping you make better money decisions is what The Ramsey Show is all about. Today at 1 p.m. on 1030 The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona here live out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point, with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVUI, The Voice. A healthy political life, a healthy community life needs reference points outside itself. We are in the weeds every day, 9 to 10, on the issues, people, and ideas surrounding us here locally, talking about real issues in real time with real people. That's the beauty of live local radio. We take a few moments regularly to step back with our faith and culture contributor, Pastor Jeff Locks, and try to make sense of a senseless world, wisdom for weird times. And I thought they were weird in 2020, and they just keep getting weirder. So thankful to have you in the seat on a regular basis. We talked about some of the news that a lot of us were pretty sure we knew about Facebook that is now hitting the news in a period of about 7 to 10 days. A huge social media giant that drives so much of our life, and its impacts on us are becoming, I think, more clear over the last 7 to 10 days than ever before, certainly in the last 6 months. So we discussed that. We've got a few moments here, but I know you, like me, have been processing the state and national conversation around our senior senator here, Senator Sinema, Kyrsten Sinema, and certainly the events of the weekend. It turns out you've been thinking about them too. This was not planned per se, but what's on your mind?
Yeah, I think, I mean, one of the things, one of many things that I think has been spotlighted is the activist that followed her into the bathroom to, you know, hopefully get their point or their agenda across, and then, you know, how one responds to, is that okay, is that not? It's interesting how we even arrived here in the first place, that's a possibility. But on its face, like hearing the lack of boundaries, for me, as someone just peering in, it's like, who would allow that? That's crazy. But then stepping back from it, or even maybe even delving into it a little bit further and trying to figure out the details, like what was really going on, what's she done leading into this, what's the story behind these activists, and it's a lot more divided, that conversation. I think you've said in your own conversations this past week, you thought it was one-sided, but there were people that were passionate for both sides of the discussion. I think at its core, what are those boundaries that we have or don't have anymore in society that allow us to treat people the way that we've treated them?
I had a similar thought, and then I want to ask you from a perspective of a pastor and leader of a faith community in Tucson. Again, coming back to that question, that timeless question: how then should we live? What does this all mean? Is, I think my concern with the story, and I did mention it yesterday, is, look, understanding and supporting the purpose and place of direct action, of civic dialogue, of protest, of participatory democracy, of difficult debate, all of that, I think, is baked into what it means to be the United States of America, mm-hmm. and I think it is worthy of protecting. I think the concern that I have had over the last number of days is that there is a lack of regard, a lack of desire for maintaining basic norms and institutions. And I don't mean upholding the system that may be broken for the sake of just upholding the system. But I think when we give up basic human dignity and decency as a means to an end, the end is lost. Mm-hmm. And I firmly believe that. And I think that's the part of this story that just has me thinking. How do we, you know, what does that all mean for us? How do we live?
Well, it's interesting, in the interview with President Biden, the conversation, the response he gave was, it's a part of the process. And, you know, it's like, really? I think if I'm the senator, I say, well, if that's part of the process, how do I avoid this in the future? I'm going to have a security detail or someone to establish those boundaries for me. I think, you know, I think of my father and my interaction with my siblings growing up. He would say, it takes two. So what's the contributory behavior that's led to this? And a lot of the threads that I've read, and I'm not an expert on the senator or her interactions with people. So, you know, if you're listening and you You follow her a lot more closely. You probably have more to say to this. But the general response has been she doesn't listen. She's not accessible. And the younger generation, maybe more of a passionate version. I'm thinking of AOC and the Cruella version of the dress at the Met Gala. You know what I mean? There's a greater level of passion. And I look in the mirror when I was in my 20s. I have to confess, I did the very thing where my own account executive is a great friend of mine. She went into the bathroom and I followed her with the file and said, could I get this done by? And she said, this is where I'm establishing boundaries. Like, yeah, we're friends and we hang out afterwards, but do not follow me into the bathroom. And you know what was helpful about that is maybe it was the naivety of a 20-year-old guy. You know, if you're a female listening, or you're like, you're so dumb, Jeff. I was and still am in many ways. But it took her saying, this is not okay, for me to say, I appreciate you pushing back and letting me know in a social context that I've crossed the limits, and I won't do that again. And I don't know, you know, where that balance is. Someone has to say to the upcoming generation, certain things are not okay. And at the same time, with the senator, what platforms do you create to listen to the people that are trying to get their message across? It works both ways.
Any final thoughts on what I think are the intentional breakdown of norms and institutions as an institution that is the church? Any thoughts on this broader kind of social moment?
When you talk about breakdown, I don't want to create the woo-woo experience, but this last week we had a few friends come into the house, and we hadn't seen them since pre-COVID. One of them has since been in juvie, in jail, and he was asking me questions about our kids and what was going on with them. And ultimately what they were saying is, your kids have a life that we want, and they brought it back to the fact that their family has been divided, broken, absent. And my conversation with them is, your parents' decisions do not determine the outcome of your life. You can take responsibility for those, and you can change your future. I think for each of us, we have to make those determinations and find people, surround ourselves with people that can help us get there.
Let's leave it there for now. Our conversation today with Pastor Jeff Loxton, our faith and culture contributor. Where can people find you off the air at Hope City Church?
HopeCityChurchTucson.com.
Easy enough.
Yes.
Pastor Jeff, thank you as always for being with us and for doing this with us and tackling the difficult conversations of the day. And we will see you again on the other side.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Pastor. That does it for our top of the hour conversation. When we come back, I want to ask a question in light of the difficult day that was Monday. I was in my office downtown, and on both directions there was shootings and killings and armed robberies, and it has me thinking about our city of Tucson. I have a question. I'm going to ask it, and I won't get an answer, but I want to ask the question on the other side of the break. And then Ruben Navarrete will be with us. We'll keep talking about Facebook and what it all means. Come on back with us after a few moments here on Tipping Point, AM 1030 KVY The Voice. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Life isn't about money, but how you handle money impacts everything. The Ramsey Show, today at 1 on 1030 The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Good morning to you. Welcome live here out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point with Zach Yenster on AM 1030 KVUI, The Voice. We just had on and said goodbye to our faith and culture contributor, Pastor Jeff Loxton. We talked Facebook, social norms, institutions, so many pieces of the questions of this American moment. How did we get here and how do we get back out? I am pretty convinced that whether you are listening with a red team on or blue team shirt on, Republican or Democrat, I think there is a wide understanding that this moment is not our best and brightest, and that we need to figure out where we went wrong and where to get right again. Because I think we have it in us to do so, but this is not how it's supposed to be. This is not the best of us as Americans, as Arizonans, however zoned in you want to look at it. Interesting conversations. We'll pick up the Facebook conversation with nationally syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete here in just a moment. But I feel compelled to ask a question. I'm going to throw it out into the ether. I'm not going to get an answer very likely. I don't have an answer to this question. It is a question that is on my mind, and it's been a question that has been on my mind since we saw proportional to Tucson, a 2020 that was a record part one crime, homicide, shooting, so on and so forth. That was, as I understand it, a 10-year record in 2020, and a 2021 that has seen an increase on that record-breaking year. And, you know, this week in particular has been really interesting, of course. If you don't even have to be living here to have seen the news. I think it was in the New York Times, the DEA officer that was shot at the Amtrak station on Monday. You know, when I got out of studio was when the news was coming out on non-Facebook platforms, right? Because Facebook had gone down. Of not only was there a shooting of law enforcement officers at the Amtrak, but at almost the same time there was also an armed robbery that was at least attempted at the one of the banks in downtown Tucson. Both instances a matter of blocks from me. And that was Monday, of course. And we've continued to see this week more officer-related shootings, more gun-based violence in this community. And it just, I think it is so blatantly obvious to just about everybody that we are seeing an increase that is statistically unprecedented, at least for a very long time, at least for a decade, and the problem is not going away, that the problem is getting worse. And here is my question, and I don't say this in any way sassily, if that's a word. I'm not trying to be a smart aleck. This is a genuine question. And I, of course, I think would appreciate a genuine answer at some point. When does this rise in crime locally become a council meeting agenda in the city of Tucson? When does this violence become a press release from the city? When does this violence reach a level where someone in a seat of influence locally says, this is a problem? And I'm almost at the point where, look, I know there's two angles on this. right? Some of my red shirt team friends will point to supporting police, funding police. We need more police officers. We need to support our police more. My friends who wear blue shirts may say, look, it's a gun-based violence problem. I'm at a point, and this is a little exaggerative, but let me go here. I'm at a point where I almost don't care what the messaging is. Like everybody, you know, there's one of those things that I would probably prefer to hear. But I just want someone to stand up at a podium at a press conference and say, I am sick and tired of this gun violence. We're going to solve it. We're going to fix it. Enough is enough. Or someone to stand up at a podium and say, this level of crime is not enough. We are all in on our law enforcement officers. We need more. We need to crack down on crime. Whatever it is, I need someone behind a podium. I need an agenda item on mayor and council. I need someone somewhere to say, this is not okay. And it needs to be public, and it needs to be messaged, and it needs to be public facing. And I just haven't seen it yet. Now, if I've missed it, let me know. I watch a lot of council meetings. I look at a lot of agendas. I'm busy like everybody else. There's stuff I'm sure I miss. If I'm missing it, tell me. Because I'm not trying to force a narrative. I am simply wondering, when do things in our community get to a level where somebody, for some reason, says enough is enough? When does the coach on the sideline get mad that the plays are not being called the way they should be? That the strategy of the team is not going the way it should be? What is that line? And this is a genuine question. Again, I'm not being a smart aleck. This is a genuine question. When is enough enough? When beyond kind of the bureaucratic kind of thoughts and prayers messaging, when do we hit a level where this is important enough to be a focus in this community? Genuine question. Not being a smart aleck, not trying to make a point, not trying to score points. It's a genuine question because we obviously haven't hit that level yet. I want to go to break in a second, but September 11th, 2021, an article written out of Chicago. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot started this year with an email expressing support for police leadership and a pledge to reduce crime. I said four words, Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot. I'm pretty certain everybody listening right now knows which side of the political aisle Mayor Lightfoot comes from and what the city of Chicago is. Those four words speak for itself. There are management of public safety in Chicago saying, we're going down the wrong track. This is a problem. We have to solve it. We are ignoring systemic problems. We're not making the connections between the lack of investment and violence. We are refusing for way too long in this city to address these problems. And the chickens are coming home to roost, Mayor Lightfoot said. I got to go to a break, but my point is that we are looking at, in Tucson, what maps across the country. We are seeing massive increases in public safety and crime. We are seeing similar leadership of cities around the country getting behind podiums, sending emails, sending messages saying, enough is enough. We're refusing to solve the problems. The chickens are coming home to roost. That's all I'm asking for. When does that happen in Tucson? Because it hasn't happened yet. And if it's not this week, when is it going to be? Because this week, as my friend Tim Steller said by tweet, Lord, Tucson is in a tough moment. And he's right. So when does it begin? I got to go. Ruben Navarrete is on the other side of our break. We're going to talk Facebook for the next few minutes. A nationally syndicated writer, columnist, TV personalities with us after a short break. We're going to go there now. Come on back as we finish this drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser.
News at the top and bottom of every hour. 10:30 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
When looking at retirement planning, conventional thinking asks, how do I get a higher return? Should I take on more risk or is there a better product? Jason Robinson and his team at MassMutual focuses on the overall strategy first. He and his team of advisors have the tools necessary to measure the proper balance of investments and actuarial science for the best path possible for the highest retirement income. Call Jason and his team at 520-274-3749 to have them run through an analysis at no cost to see how much more efficient you can be, and tell them Zach sent you over.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
After you finish listening to The Tipping Point, listen to my show, The Hugh Hewitt Show, this morning from 10 to noon, right here on 1030 KBOI The Voice.
Tucson, welcome back. Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. If you're just joining us, on with us now, Ruben Navarrete, the most widely read Latino columnist in the country, syndicated Washington Post, USA Today, Daily Beast. You've seen him on Fox News, CNN, everything in between. Longtime centered voice on the airwaves in this state and nationwide, now coming to us from the state of California regularly. Ruben, good morning to you. Thanks for being with us.
Zach, great to be back with you. Thank you.
Let me start off by reading this. I read this a little bit earlier in the hour with one of our other contributors. We're spending a lot of time, and I think appropriately so, on the news that we're seeing out of Facebook. Washington Post, even as early as mid-month last month, Facebook knew that teen girls on Instagram reported in large numbers that the app was hurting their body image and mental health. It knew that its content moderation system suffered from an indefensible double standard in which celebrities were treated far differently than the average user. It knew that a 2018 change to its newsfeed software intended to promote meaningful interactions, quote, ended up promoting outrageous and divisive political content. It knew all of those things because they were findings from its own internal research teams, but it didn't tell anyone. In some cases, its executives even made public statements at odds with the findings. I'm becoming concerned, Ruben, as I think a lot of the country is across the aisle, about the monopoly, A, that Facebook and other social media companies have become, and B, the fact that their algorithms are designed to foment outrage and mistruth. That's how it works. That's how it survives. How do you feel about all this and the Wall Street Journal investigation and the whistleblower testifying before Congress this week?
So, Mr. Chairman, I rise in defense of Facebook. Okay. Point of privilege. So
there's three of you, but go ahead.
Yes, I did not intend to defend Facebook, and then I heard the indictment. And as I started going through the 10 different levels of the indictment as laid out by the whistleblower, Lauren Hogan, and also by members of the committee and media and the like, and as I heard the indictment, it seems that so many of these points are bogus. Because we're asking of Facebook things we don't ask of other people. For instance, one count in the indictment, well, let me just start at the beginning. One of the things that Hogan says is, look, it is the case that Mark Zuckerberg and the folks at Facebook know how to put guardrails and protect some of their users, but they refuse to do so because they're only driven by money. If that is the case, and that's easy, we ought to force them to put those guardrails in and hold people accountable at Facebook. If you divide it up, if you want to run into the ground or throw it into the sea, I'm fine with that. I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is the bogus indictment, because Hogan didn't stop there. She basically blamed Facebook for civil unrest in Ethiopia, for destroying democracy, dividing America, polarizing the electorate. All that assumes that before Facebook was created, when Mark Zuckerberg was still at his dorm at Harvard, before he started this company, we were all getting along great. Republicans in Arizona loved Democrats in Arizona. Latinos and whites were getting along. Black and white, not a problem. We were all doing swimmingly until Mark came and divided us all and injected all this polarization into our politics, which I would argue goes all the way back to the Bork hearings and the Clinton presidency that followed. So I think we've been divided and polarized for a long, long time. I think it's a bogus indictment against Facebook.
Ruben Navarrete, I want to ask you about that, because I don't disagree with you that I think it would be naive to say that this is Facebook's fault completely. They say the same thing about money, Ruben, that money doesn't make people good or bad. Money magnifies the person that was already there.
You already are.
And as soon as they have the tool to use, you find out who they really were. So this is my genuine question, Ruben, because you have been active and involved throughout the kind of the timeline that you just mentioned. Would you agree that while Facebook was not the origin of polarization in America, we used to shoot our political opponents, so I think we have improved here in this country. But don't you think that there was a tipping point where social media accelerated and magnified and made larger and more deep the division that was already there? Can we agree on that?
We can agree on that, because social media is glib, it's anonymous, it's trite, it's personal, it's mean. We can agree on that completely. Put another way, I do not agree with my liberal friends on the left that Donald Trump brought racism to America. I think racism was already here. I think Trump seized on it, exploited it for his own use. I think that likewise, Facebook was able to identify certain fault lines and exploited it for its own benefit. But specifically to the counts of the indictment, it says it's driven only by money. That it makes $65 billion a year and it's driven by money. Oh, gee whiz, what capitalist company in America is it? Apple, Coca-Cola, Netflix, Disney, that's not driven by profit? Anybody who has a board of directors isn't driven by profit? Secondly, they say the problem with Facebook is they give us the content we want. They see where Zach is going and they send him those ads and those stories related to what Zach wants. Well, God forbid that that's the model. I used to be familiar with this thing we used to have back in the Stone Age, and it was a product where we pride ourselves on going against the grain and not listening to our customers. That product was called newspapers. Whatever happened to them? You know, so the people who ran newspapers were idiots and morons, and they ran the whole industry into the ground. They didn't have an MBA between them, right? And so here Facebook is doing what Coca-Cola, what Netflix, what Apple Computers does so successfully in terms of gauging tastes and catering to those tastes. And somehow we're not bringing Coca-Cola up before Congress. We're not bringing Apple up before Congress. We're bringing Facebook up before Congress. The indictment is bogus.
This is not the first time that Facebook has been involved in hearings in the last year and a half. We've had a lot of those conversations on this show of, you know, when Google, when Apple, when Facebook, when they all sit down in front of Congress, what should be the end result? One thing that I have a growing concern about, and not a concern that comes from the right or left of America's political heart, but just objectively, is it's interesting to me now to watch social media platforms like Facebook, whose algorithm is designed to whip up outrage and mistruth to create meaningful interactions. And I think the proof is there that the algorithms do that, and you just mentioned it, Ruben. Then those platforms come back and say, well, now it's our job to figure out and to make sure you see what is the truth or what isn't. And regardless of what your view of the truth is, and I don't mean you, Ruben, but you, whoever is listening, I think that's troubling to have an institution that both creates mistruth and then regulates truth. I wonder if you're concerned about that. And then many are saying, the Wall Street Journal, one of them, who really led on the investigation in the last month or so of Facebook, are saying, look, Facebook's a monopoly. It needs to be broken up. It needs to be regulated. And there needs to be more investment in competitive platforms. So your thought, Ruben, on the first part of my little thing there. And then secondly, you're sitting in Congress today, Ruben. What would you do with Facebook?
So in terms of the first part, your first comment's all about information. Misinformation, true information, you're going to get information. We have to be grown-ups. It's not government's job to monitor our information for us. That's the last thing you want, is government controlling information. I have to be able to watch Fox News and say, okay, that was bullcrap, and then flip it over to CNN and say, okay, that's bullcrap. I have to be able to do that. I have to be able to discern that on my own. I don't need government to be my nanny. I don't need it to be my teacher, my arbiter of truth, my disseminator of information. It's the last thing government should do. And I'm struck by this. We've been down this road before, Zach. Remember when the Democrats said that talk radio caused the Oklahoma City bombing? Or on the right, when the Republicans, and this is why Ruben's in the center, because I yell BS on both parties, and they're exactly the same. There, you have the Democrats saying that talk radio caused the Oklahoma City bombing. But before that, you had the other party, you had the Republicans saying to the Democrats, you know, the record Cop Killer by Ice-T, it's actually telling young black men to kill cops. So we have all been down this road before. We've tried to outlaw sugary drinks and cigarettes and warning labels on music and talk radio. And what we tend to do is that the Republicans won't let us touch guns, and the Democrats won't let us touch Hollywood. So that, what does that leave? At least Facebook. To your second point, what would government do? If government involves itself in this, let's be clear at least about what's happening. If you want to divide it, if you want to regulate it, if you want to tax it, if you want to do all that, good. But I'm not an idiot. I wasn't born yesterday, okay? And the reason you're doing this is because Facebook doesn't play the politics game. This is the Microsoft story from, you know, a decade or two ago, part two. And what these people in Congress are basically saying to Mark Zuckerberg is, look, idiot, did you not see the tip cup in front? You don't give to our campaign. You don't contribute enough money to politics in both parties. So we're going to crucify you. So let's be clear about this. If government wants to attack Facebook, let's be clear about why they're attacking it. Because this is an extortion play, just like it was with Microsoft and Bill Gates.
Ruben Navarrete is who you are listening to right now, the most widely read Latino columnist in the country, commenting on the issues of the day, syndicated Washington Post, USA Today, Daily Beast. Really interesting, some of where you went there with that. And of course, it's interesting because it is not big government Democrats who want to break up monopolies. We've heard the most outrage from the right with regard to big tech and Facebook. And we don't have time to get into that today, but I think that is an interesting level to this we should talk about it at some point. Ruben, I don't want to have to interrupt you. Where can people go to find your latest writing and reach out to you if they want to continue the conversation off the air?
Zach, to your last point, you're going to find Republicans don't want to regulate guns. It's easier to go after Facebook. But to your point about my contact information, RubenNavarrete.com. Follow me. I'm taking fire from both the right and the left because the truth hurts.
Ruben Navarrete, thanks for being with us on a regular basis. We'll do this again soon. Until then, take care out there.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ruben. When we return on the program, of course, Hugh Hewitt up next, Bill Buckmaster at noon. When we return on the program here on AM 1030 KVY, The Voice on Thursday, Workforce Pivots with Devin Underwood. We'll also catch up with Carlos Ruiz. We'll talk Proposition 206, the Tucson Minimum Wage Act that will look to raise the minimum wage within the city of Tucson. We'll talk about that. You're getting your ballots as we speak, so we'll keep you informed on the issues. That and more this week coming up here on Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVY, The Voice. Stay safe out there. We'll see you tomorrow, Tucson. Take care.